Welcome to Social Media Know-How, the podcast featuring the greatest minds and brands in the world of social and digital marketing. And now, your host, founder and CEO of Link Humans, Jorgen Sundberg.
Hej svejsan! Hur är läget? Many thanks for tuning in to Social Media Know-How, the Link Humans podcast. I am your host, Jorgen Sundberg, and this is the podcast where we slice and we dice social media in all shapes and sizes. It is it's the second week of June 2016. I've just been on holiday, so I'm not quite sure what day it is. But I am very excited about today's show anyway. I'm going to be joined by Karen Lerner, and we're going to talk all about websites. They are social, I promise. And more on that shortly after an announcement. So for our faithful listeners to this podcast, you'll know that we have moved into a new office. We've been here for a few weeks now. And a new office party is finally taking place. It's on the 16th of June, which is next week. So Thursday, the 16th of June, I should say 2016, in case you're listening to this at another year. But anywho, you are very much welcome and invited to come to this party. And it is from 6 p.m. onwards. We'll show off our new digs. We'll offer up some nibbles and drinks. And of course, it will be a great networking opportunity. You get to meet, well, the whole Link Humans team, other friends of Link Humans, and also myself, if you'd like to say hello. So I was just thinking back, and I think last time we did a party like this was about 6 years ago, so when we launched Link Humans. So you really don't want to miss this one, because you might have to wait until 2022 for the next one. So try to make it if you can. It is in London, and we're at 13 Hawley Close in Camden Town, which is basically where work.life is based. And all the full details will be in the show notes, of course, and I really hope you can make it. Do you want to get in touch with me? I'd love to hear from you, from all of the listeners to this show. Ping me an email at jorgen@linkhumans.com. And of course, if you've got questions about the party next week, more than happy to answer any of those. Now, before we listen to this interview about effective websites, let's dive into this week's tip of the week. Does that make sense? Let's just listen to the tip of the week. Right, so this week's tip is a little handy app called Nuzzle. So you may have heard about it already. I noticed a few people I follow on Twitter using it, and I've tested it for a few weeks now. I thought it looked really good, but I thought I wanted to test it before I actually mention it to other people. So essentially, it's an aggregator of your Twitter and Facebook feeds. So obviously you have a lot of updates going into both feeds, but this little handy app orders the most shared stories in your network on a daily basis. So this way you won't have to check in with the social networks all the time, just due to your FOMO. So it keeps you off it, and basically just gives you a nice digest, a nice summary. So in addition to checking what your network is sharing, there's also a tab in this app showing you what friends of friends are sharing, or second degree connections, to use a LinkedIn term. So this is sometimes even more useful, as you may already have seen what your friends are sharing if you have dipped into Facebook and Twitter and so on, but you're unlikely to have seen what's trending in their networks as well. So I find that even more useful. So Nuzzle is not the prettiest app I've ever seen, but it does a good job at keeping myself abreast of what's happening out there. So basically I get a digest notification in the morning and one in the evening. That's on my phone. And I also get a daily email, which I should probably unsubscribe from, because I get too many notifications there. But basically the point here is that you can use it however you like. You can have zero notifications, just check in on the app every now and then. And I think the market for these type of apps is very crowded. I'm sure you've tried lots of different ones. But I have noticed that Nuzzle is backed by some serious Silicon Valley investors, and they've kept the marketing on the lowdown, possibly just focusing on the product, which I think is a good way of going about it. Anyway, check it out on iOS, Android, and at nuzzle.com. That's N-U-Z-Z-E-L.com. And I'll put a link in the show notes, of course, to that. And I should also add that it's completely free. Okay, so with that, it's time to patch in Soho and transition to this week's interview, all about effective websites. Karen Lerner, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Jorgen. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Now, tell us about your company, Top Left Design, and what do you do there?
Well, thank you for enunciating. That is how I like to say it, Top Left Design. We're a design agency. We do a lot of online design, websites, blogs, email newsletters, and social media design. And we also do branding and design for print. And we're based in Soho in London. And there are 7 of us in the team.
Great. And in my head, you're fairly specialized around websites and so on. And that's what I wanted to focus in on today. Now,
yes.
With social media apps and mobile applications and so on, please tell us, why do we still need websites?
Well, I guess 2 reasons. First of all, assuming that your website is well-planned and well-designed and you've written really great, succinct copy, your website is where you can express what's unique about your business. And it can help you, you can divide up the information in a way that makes sense for how you want other people to experience it. It's where you can have complete control of how you are perceived. When it comes to social media, external websites like Twitter and LinkedIn and Facebook, they complement the online presence that you have, but they're not something you can completely control. You can't control the interface. You can't control if they're going to shut it down one day. And the content that's on those websites is not really owned by you or hosted by you. It's on their servers. So anything could happen.
Right. So control. Okay.
What's, yeah, I like control.
Another argument against websites, I guess, in comparison to social and so on, is that websites and the content they are seen as very static. How do you drive engagement on a website?
Well, it's true. If you just had a website that was what we call a brochure site, then you could just have what they say static information. That is information that doesn't change very often. But nowadays, most websites we do include a blog, which is the living part of the website where you can continuously update it with stories and insights and advice, all to help support what you want people to believe about you. If you have well-written headlines, that will be the reason why people will arrive at your website, because you've got a blog and you've shared your blog articles with well-written headlines. And then once they're there, they will be able to explore, look around and see what else you do. The other ways to drive engagement on a website and make it less static is by having compelling messages where you ask thought-provoking questions. You highlight links to pages that answer the biggest questions that people have. And you can always build in the commenting features that you have on social media sites into websites. You know, you've probably seen comments on blogs, and on some websites there's quite a lot of conversation that happens between people after they've read a particular blog post within a website. And you can host videos as well. And videos give a lot of movement and, enticement to websites.
Okay. And if we look at websites, well, clients that you work with and so on, what are some of the common mistakes you see that companies make with their sites?
Well, what I've seen a lot of, the biggest mistakes people make is, I'm sure everybody's guilty of this in some respect, is just putting it up and forgetting about it, thinking that your work is done once you launch the website, and then not thinking about your website very often. Quite quickly, the information on it will be less relevant or out of date, especially if you have decided that you will have a blog on your website, but then you don't keep it up to date. That's one of the only drawbacks of having a blog, is that you do need to keep it up to date. That's one of the biggest mistakes. Another one is thinking that you can do it yourself, make your own website, when you don't have any sense of design or attention to detail. You have to be quite honest with yourself on how good you are at that sort of thing. Some people believe that they're better than they are. They're kind of delusional, I suppose. Other people are more aware but don't really mind and don't care how they're perceived. And then other people are aware enough to know that they should leave certain bits to the expert and do the bits that are more straightforward themselves.
Yeah, I think that's an issue for entrepreneurial people. I know myself, I've been hacking away at websites way too much than I should have been doing, and instead should be focusing on business probably. Right, so if someone comes to you with a not-so-good website, what are the elements that you help them sort out? You know, what's your process or what's your methodology?
We've been working on websites for 14 years, so yeah. We have a very good tried and tested methodology that works really well. The first, when we have like a chemistry meeting where we get to know the client and what their requirements are. And in that meeting, find out quite a lot about their business, where they are now, where they want to be, because it's not just about the website. It's about the goals of the person who we're talking to and the website, the goals of the business. The website's supposed to support those goals. If it's raising awareness or bringing in a new type of client or impressing people or helping you communicate your values, all of those things can be achieved with a well-planned and well-designed website, but we do need to know what it is they want out of it. Once we've got that initial overview, we've agreed the price for the website, we do a briefing meeting, which is more about the brand and the design preferences. So we ask questions like, what are your key messages? What do you want people to believe about you? What are your preferences in terms of images and fonts and things like that? What other websites do you like? Although we still recommend things for them as well as asking those questions. We ask them a lot of questions and get as much information as possible. Once we have that information, we then go and work on initial design concepts and set up a meeting with our clients to show them the options that they could go for when it comes to the design. So we usually show them two or three different look and feel designs that usually represent their home page and maybe one or two other pages. Once we've had that meeting, we do often a live design session where they can give us feedback, and in that same meeting, we can make changes in front of them, show them how different images might look, or if we move things around a little bit according to their feedback. Sometimes they just want to, you know, think about it and think about the different options and sleep on it and then give us feedback the next day. But usually from this interactive way of presenting the designs and discussing it, we get a finalized design within the same week of that initial presentation with the changes that they want. Once we've got that approved, we get a sign-off on that. We then design the inner pages of the website, have another meeting to show those, get feedback, make changes. And then once that's signed off, we get our websites coded by our amazing coders who are really good at sticking to the designs that we've designed. And we code in WordPress and put in the text that either the client or a copywriter has supplied with our guidance. And then we do final tests and launch it on the intended domain. So that's the basic process from start to finish.
Wow. Okay, great. And how long does that normally take?
Well, from the first meeting, from the first briefing meeting, where we know everything we need to know to get started on the design, it's between 1 and 2 weeks to start to show the initial designs. And then for tweaks on those designs, a couple days. Once those are decided, inner pages between 1 or 2 weeks again. And then the coding part, 2 to 3 weeks, coding and content entry. If the client's really efficient, then we can get most average size websites, 15 to 20 pages with a blog and WordPress, launched within about 2 months. But sometimes delays occur because people need to ask around, or they're not sure about something, or they need time to write the content, and they're not sure about outsourcing it to a copywriter. Those are the things that delay projects. But so 2 to 3 months is average.
Yep, got it. Okay. And what, in your opinion, should be the structure of a good and effective company website?
I like to always have a home, about, blog, and contact as main links, although you could vary the about name, the name of the about page, to about us, about, and the company name, or who we are, that sort of thing. I like to have a meet the team page if there is a team. I think it's important to show the people who are in the business, because that's one of the things most people are curious about when they visit websites. They click on the team page and they want to see the person that they know. And then when it comes to services that the company has, it depends on how many there are. But if you can group them into categories and put them into the main navigation, it gives more of a sense of what the company does, rather than just having a generic word services. So, for example, if the company is a consultancy company and they specialize in investment banks, instead of just saying consultancy, they could say consultancy for investment banks. And then if one of their big values is to create a culture shift, they can put a culture shift as another link. And then across the top, you get some sense of their value and their specialty without even clicking on anything.
Okay, great. And yeah, I think you mentioned earlier about the blog section. Is that a requirement nowadays for all websites? Or
No, it's not like you'll be put in jail if you don't have a blog on your website. I'm very enthusiastic about blogs. I love them. I think they give so much extra capacity, because while we're maybe designing a couple extra pages and building them in, it's going to give you the chance to create as many articles as you like. So having a blog, when you launch it, let's say you load 5 or 6 articles, just so that when you launch the website, the blog doesn't look empty. But over the next year, you could have one a month or one a week. So you could end up having maybe 65 articles on your website, which each is a new page on your website. So that means another page that Google can find, another page that people can read, and another place for people to explore more about what your company is about. A place where you can put case studies, common sense advice, the story behind your business, stories about your own activities, guest posts from people in your industry, embedded videos, interviews. So much potential just within that one section if it's well organized and categorized. And we give advice on how to write good headlines and how to organize blogs so that they make sense to visitors.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd say from a Link Humans website, we have a lot of success with it, with a blog section. We have loads and loads of traffic on there. However, one thing that we are struggling with, people are signing up to our newsletter and so on, but we're not really converting in terms of people getting in touch for, I don't know, inquiries with questions and so on. Where do you think we're going wrong there?
Well, it depends on the newsletter that you're sending, because that's another experience that they have from you. So if you have a newsletter, you may have too many calls to action, or you may not have an easy enough thing that you want them to think about or decide on when you're sending it to them. So if you make things simpler for people, I find that we send our newsletter out, and things that have the most engagement are usually things that don't take much thinking from their point of view. So if I say, send me back an email and I'll send you a link to a free ebook, I get like 100 people replying. But if I say, book a 1-hour meeting with me, first 5 people, you know, that means that they've got to think about their diary and commit to an hour and everything. And that might be fewer people. So the conversion depends on what the next step after they sign up.
So keeping it simple, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I will have a think about that. And domain names. How important are domain names? We all know that, you know, when you set up a business or you rebrand, you know, you have to get the right .com or .co.uk domain name. But are they as important as they used to be?
I think there's so many. It's very hard to get the domain name, the very generic domain names about specific topics. And so even when you're naming a business, I was just helping somebody with naming a business. And part of my research was checking whether that was, the .com was available for that name. And if it's already been taken by another company, it does mean that you've already got some competition out there from people Googling your name. So I think it's definitely worth thinking about when you, if you have a chance, when you're naming the business. But even so, the most obvious thing people look for is still going to be your company name, .com, even though there are all these new variations and you can have .legal and .london and .net and all these other things. If you can try and get the .com of something, it'll be probably easier for people to find you. And it's important to have the name be easy to spell and not be confusing to pronounce or anything.
Like top left the sign.
Yes.
.com.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's why I have to enunciate. Otherwise, people think it's top list design. So I have to be careful about that.
Okay. Yeah. We get a lot of linkhuman.com.
Yes. Which,
exactly. I should probably buy that domain, actually. Right. And I think you talked about this earlier, but should you try your hand at building your own site or should you go with a developer or an agency? And also, what would be the costs involved?
Well, it depends on your time. Commit your time and your patience. Yes, you can go online and there are template websites that you can use and you can learn how to do them yourself. We really like WordPress, so there are lots of WordPress template websites out there. However, they seem like they're going to be easy, but they're usually quite complicated. And it would take, you know, maybe 2 or 3 days of work to get it figured out. So if somebody's not very patient with learning new technical skills and gets frustrated with that, that's, you know, you've got to weigh up whether the stress is worth it. Because in the end, when somebody who's not an experienced coder or designer fiddles their way through a template and follows the instructions, their end result will never be as good as if we did it, because they're not going to have the experience and the attention to detail and the design eye, or they're just going to be frustrated about how the template is limited and they may want to do something completely different and realize too late that it's not possible. So it can look amateur and it can be frustrating. There are some that are easier to use than others. You can think of the DIY version as like a temporary thing. If you really don't have the budget to pay a professional or an agency, just think, okay, I'm going to go for the simplest type of template website I can find, and it's going to be step one, and I'm going to recognize that I need to look at changing that and upgrading it when my business is making more money, so that you know that it's not something you should keep forever. As far as costs go, we have a range of different costs. We even have a startup offer on our website for £1,500. Our full bespoke designed WordPress websites range from £4,000 to £10,000 on average. And we do payment plans. So we split payments across 6 months, 8 months, or even a year, depending on the client, what they are happy with, because it helps them. And also it just it spreads it out for them, basically.
Okay, great. And would you say your pricing, is it low, middle, or high?
For the quality, I would say we're...
Very good.
Affordable, of course. Some people think we're expensive, and then some people tell us we're too cheap and we should raise our prices. It depends who I talk to.
So yeah,
hard. You just got to go with what you're, what you feel is comfortable for you when it comes to pricing.
Yeah, and to justify the pricing, how do you how can you show the return on investment on a website, and what are the metrics for it?
Well, the first one, I suppose, is when you first launch the website, if you're feeling confident and proud as a business owner that this website represents you well and something you want everyone to see, that's the first measurement. It's got to feel right. Because when you don't love your website, then you're not going to use all the other marketing tools out there and talk about it and, you know, put it on your business card and all that, because you're embarrassed about it. In fact, you'll end up apologizing for it. Like, I meet many people who go, "Ooh, don't look at my website. It's terrible." Yeah. I think that's, you know, just don't have a website you're embarrassed by. So that's the first measurement. I guess the second would be traffic. So you can measure whether there's an increase in traffic to your content, to your website pages and your blog posts through Google Analytics, which is free tool from Google. You put a tiny bit of code on each page and it will tell you which of your pages is the most visited, how long people stayed on different pages, and how long and what they searched for in order to find you. So the amount of traffic. And then the next way to measure it is your conversion. So how many people are responding to the calls to action you have on the website? How many people are getting in touch via the contact form on your contact page, or going to the most your most important case study, or reading the blog post you want people to read, or just picking up the phone and calling you? And if you ask people where they found you, sometimes they don't even remember, because they'll have seen you on loads of different things if you're active on social media. So the website's just a part of it. But those are all ways to measure ROI.
Okay, great. And what about technology? You mentioned WordPress a couple of times. Is that your preferred technology, and what other options are there?
Well, we really do like WordPress. We specialize in WordPress. I suppose if you speak to different coders and developers, they'll all say their favorite is the best one. But from our clients' point of view, when we've had clients who've come to us with websites that were coded in some bespoke system or on Joomla or Drupal, they're always complaining about how difficult it is to update. So WordPress is not that way, though there'll be people who will say, oh, for me, it's really annoying to update. You have to kind of learn a few skills to do that. But once you learn the ins and outs of it, it's not difficult at all. It's very flexible. So I would just say WordPress is my favorite. We use HTML, of course, for the front end code, the basic code before the content management system is added. And we try not to touch anything else, just from learning to do what we're good at.
Right. Yeah. And I can vouch for the ease of use of WordPress and the availability of plugins. And there's so many opportunities with WordPress, because I started a couple of websites on Drupal many years ago. And it was just really frustrating. I felt like I had to be a developer in order to just make simple tweaks. So jumping to WordPress was the best thing
I did. Yeah. See, we were right. There are times when the website has so many different types of technology that WordPress, people say that it's better to use something else like Magento or whatever. Or there's different databases that have to talk to each other. But WordPress is really flexible for many different purposes and many different types of businesses. So we would usually recommend that depending on the client.
And also, because this podcast is called Social Media Know-How, I need to ask this social question. How do we connect social media and your website?
Well, there's the very obvious, where you have your social media icons that are linking to active accounts visible on your website, either in the header or the footer or both. We only ever allow people to have those, which we're quite strict, if they've had some sort of, they understand how to use the channel that they are representing. So if they're going to have a Twitter icon on their homepage, that means they know how to use Twitter and they're active on it. Otherwise, we'll take it off, because we don't want people to click on these all hopeful to see some activity and learn a bit more about the company and find something that's been dormant for ages or yeah. that they don't really know how to use properly, because Twitter is a bit weird that way. It has some strange things that you have to learn in order to use it properly, but it's one of my favorite channels. So that's one thing. And then you can have a Twitter feed on your website, and that can be designed custom designed so that it fits in with the design of your website and it can have the latest tweet. Your blog articles can have social media sharing icons. So that's another way of incorporating social media. In some cases, you can have what we call a Facebook like box. So it's like a little embedded representation of your Facebook page and shows how many people have followed you on Facebook or clicked like on your Facebook page. And when people see that on a website, they see if there's any of their friends, they kind of get fed to the top so they can see any familiar people as in a little picture grid. So that can be a quite good thing to add. But it depends on whether your website is designed to look good with that type of Facebook looking thing, because it can't really change the way that box looks. And finally, you can have Tweetsdemonials. This is a plugin in WordPress where it feeds all the tweets that you've clicked like on. So if you've clicked like on some of the tweets that people have said nice things about you, it will just rotate those nice things in a on your website, perhaps in your blog or on another page. So that's another way to integrate social media into your website.
Oh, great. So I like that. Tweetstimonials, yeah?
Yes. Yeah.
Great. Excellent. Okay, that was my final question. Where can our listeners learn more about yourself, Karen, and Top Left Design?
Oh, okay. Well, everyone's welcome to come to our website, www.topleftdesign.com. And you can email me at Karen, so K-E-R-E-N, at topleftdesign.com.
Great. Karen Lono, thank you.
Thanks.
Right, there we have it. What do you think the future holds for websites? They've obviously been around for as long as the internet, and they have been declared dead a few times, along with emails, for a while now. But they hang in there. And myself, I still like to look at a company's website, although I have to admit I get a lot of kind of background information, and I get more of a feeling for what people are thinking in a company when I look at LinkedIn and Twitter. Let me know what you think on the hashtag SMKnowHow. And of course, everything that Karen talked about will be in the show notes article. And this week's big shout out is going out to our friend Lars Ingerslev. Lars Ingerslev, Swedish. He works for Smarp, which I interviewed Smarp, Mikael from Smarp the other month. Thank you very much for listening, Lars. Lars listens, he reads, and he shares the podcast. And of course, we're very happy for all the support Lars has given us. And he is the VP of International Sales and Business Development at Smarp. So if you want to get plugged into that platform, he's a great guy to speak to. So big thank you, Lars. And finally, make sure you subscribe to this podcast in iTunes, Stitcher, and other places. If you haven't already, when you hit the subscribe button, do let me know. Just send me a tweet or an email, and I'd love to thank you in person. That, my friends, is everything we've got for this week. I hope to see you next week at our party. It's on the 16th of June, 2016, I should add, just in case you're listening to this in another year. But thank you very much for tuning in, everyone, and hopefully catch you next week.
Thank you for listening to Social Media Know-How with your host, Jorgen Sundberg of Link Humans. For show notes and more, go to linkhumans.com/podcast and check out the hashtag SMKnowHow.
I have a poem that I've written, which I won't, it's not a very long poem, it's very, very short, that I've used often when I've had my team being trained in the way we do things at Top Left Design. And it's to remind people that when you're finished, you're only finished when your client knows you're finished. So sometimes you think, yeah, I'm done with that, but you're only done when somebody knows you're done. So the poem is as follows. You're finished, you're done. With relief, you'll exhale. You've remembered to check, upload, and email.